This is The Hollywood Outsider, a weekly movie and TV podcast, which can be found at thehollywoodoutsider.com. We're also on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or your podcast app of choice. Please share the show and your social media outlets with your friends. That would be greatly appreciated. And normally we would talk about all kinds of movies and TV stuff. This week, instead, we are going to talk about one particular film and series, and that is The Planet of the Apes, specifically War for the Planet of the Apes. We're going to talk about the entire film, how it connects to this trilogy, the Caesar trilogy, and where we see it in the scope of the entire Planet of the Apes series. Now, joining me for this special episode is my fellow host, Scott Clark.
You threw me off a little bit when you said War for the Planet of the Apes. I thought it was the third one in the series.
It is. Bink. And also joining us is John Davenport.
Insert quippy intro here.
Yes, exactly. Right. Literally right here. Okay. Well, let me get into this. Like, we're going to talk about this war for the... Did anybody else think it was War of the Planet of the Apes?
No, that was just you, buddy.
No, yeah.
Really?
I knew people and apes were fighting for something.
I got, maybe. As soon as the title cards come up, and then the third one finally comes up, and it says War for, and I'm like, am I in a different movie? I could have swore it was War of the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, because there's another movie that closely, similarly titled in the same theater that plays at the exact same time.
I thought it was weird. I'm not disagreeing with you. It was weird.
It's like the difference between Transmorphers and Transformers.
There you go.
They're probably equally as bad.
They get the cheap knockoffs in the theaters as well now, not just at Redbox.
It's right. Clever. Very clever, right?
No.
All right. Well, let's get into this. Now, remember, this is a spoiler cast reactions podcast. We're talking about the movie. So if you haven't seen it, I would advise you to come back to this. I don't want to take a chance of spoiling anything for you, but we're going to get into it. I assume if you turned on this episode, you have already seen it, or you just want to know what people thought of it. Before we do, please be sure to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or whatever you listen to us on, as well as you can support the show if you go to patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider, and there are a lot of bonus stuff if you become a supporter, so please check that out too. When we last saw Caesar in Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, we have... God damn it, Aaron.
The Dawn 4 of the Planet of the Apes?
Yeah.
Damn it.
All right. Well, now we have the apes in hiding again. Humans are trying to wipe them out as they hide in caves when one man's insanity brings the war to them. Overall, what did you think of the direction? We're going to get in deep into the movie and the series here in a second. But overall, what did you think of the direction they chose to go with this final film in Caesar's trilogy?
I thought it was a really unexpected direction, but in a good way. I was really expecting there to be a lot of like just the battles that we got from Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. You know, where you just have apes against man kind of thing, because it's called War for Planet of the Apes. But this one just felt like it showed the ugliness of war. It felt like you were watching like a concentration camp movie, like a World War II or something like that with, you know, but in this case, the apes are the prisoners of war instead of other humans. I really enjoyed it. It went in directions I didn't expect. It surprised me. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
I thought the movie was fine. Like, I liked the story, and I liked the way it looked, and I liked what we got. However, I felt like the story itself ended up being too predictable. I could almost time the changes as soon as I saw them coming. You could, you know, okay, here's the setup for this, here's the setup for that. And you could nearly set a watch to how they were doing it. And really, I just had a lot of trouble getting past how predictable the story was to me.
Ooh.
I'm dumb. All right. Then.
Did you say I'm dumb then?
Yeah, because I was surprised quite a bit. There was a couple things that I'm like, how did I not see that coming?
I agree with Scott, actually. I was surprised on a couple things, too. Overall, I personally love the Ape series, the entire thing. I remember seeing Planet of the Apes when I was a kid and wondering, this Charlton Heston guy's a stud, and finding out he is. Don't laugh. It's true. But in those movies, Caesar was always this mythical figure. So it was nice to see his story kind of told in this trilogy. It was a wonderful thing. And then to see it come to a culmination in this film was beautiful. I didn't know if we were ever going to get it because the first movie was really fun. But I didn't know after Tim Burton's attempt if Rise was actually going to work. And it did. And audiences love it. And they ended up making three films. I wasn't sure. So I was really excited for this one. I felt like Rise was more fun Dawn was definitely better paced and honestly more powerful than I thought mm-hmm. this one was.
Yes.
So it's tricky because I enjoyed War a lot. I did. But the pacing, I think, languished a bit for me. And that could be a problem with my expectations, which I'll get to in a minute. But I don't really feel like the apes ever really went to war with the humans. I felt more like humans were fighting humans, kind of like in, you know, the first movie, I guess. I really didn't feel like it was – I'll get there. But beautiful performances here once again. And Andy Serkis as Caesar is just magnificent. I did really like the movie. I think it could have been more. That's all.
I think that's probably what my problem with it too, and that's probably why I felt like it was so predictable. Is like it could have been more to it. The thing that I love about the series overall is take Planet of the Apes, the original movie with Charlton Heston, and if you dissect that movie and spread it, and then rewatch this series, every single movie in the series has throwbacks to that one movie. Mm-hmm. Especially this one. This one had a great throwback. The scene in the cage had a great throwback that I was just nearly shot for shot from that movie. And I enjoyed that aspect of it a lot.
Which one do you mean? We're in spoilers, so you can talk about it.
So the scene when Caesar gets captured and he's in the cage with the rest of his clan, and it's the next morning and they wake up and they have the gorillas come in to get them to come to work. And mm-hmm. the way they open the gate, the way the monkeys come in and then the gorilla comes in with the whip. It's like, it's nearly shot for shot. This is exactly how they did it in the Charlton Heston movie. When Charlton Heston was captured, he had the surgery. They took out his voice box, whatever, made it so he couldn't talk. And he was in a cage with the humans and they brought them out. Almost the exact same thing.
All right, good point. Well, I've got a couple. You know what? You speak of that, so I might as well do that right now. I've got a couple trivia points, or people say Easter eggs. It's not really an Easter egg. Well, I guess it kind of is. But these are like nods to the original movie. The name of the group of rebelling humans are the Alpha and Omega, which is a reference to the bomb the mutants worshipped in Beneath the Planet of the Apes. The mm-hmm. logo is the same on their helmets, and the flag matches the original logo, so that's kind of cool.
Oh, cool.
Mm-hmm. While promoting Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, Andy Serkis was asked if the ALZ-113 drug had also affected apes outside of Caesar's tribe, and that's supposedly when Matt Reeves and the co-writers took note of that to lead to the introduction of Bad Ape in this movie.
He was so great.
He was. We'll get there. Hang on. I just want a couple, two other ones. Caesar's son shares his name with the Roddy McDowall character in the original film, Cornelius. Mm-hmm. And Nova, I caught this one because, like I said, big fan of the original series. But Nova is named after the character played by Linda Harrison in the first and second movies in the original franchise.
So is she growing up to be that character?
No, that's still a couple hundred years away, or 100 years plus away from where that we are at the end of the series.
Oh, okay.
Maybe. I don't know how long these apes last. I mean, they seem to multiply pretty quick, so maybe they can live forever. I don't know. All right. Well, let's get into the nuts and bolts of the movie. So what did you think? I think I know everybody's answer, but what did you think of Andy Serkis as Caesar and his arc over these three films, especially his ending, his finality?
Oh, my God. His arc was fantastic, and Andy Serkis's performance is just amazing. Each time I watched this series, I disappeared, he disappeared, and I was watching a monkey do stuff, and I thought that was really cool. I always spend a lot of time looking for, okay, where's he at? Where's the monkey at? Where's the art at? And they just, it all blends in seamlessly. You don't run into any artifacting or anything like that that lets you hint at the idea that this is not CG. And as far as Andy's, I mean, I can't say anything better about him. And I liked how his character kind of grew from kind of being tortured in the first movie, you know, having a good family, but then kind of being tortured to then trying to be, a, you know, kind of good and take care of everybody. And to where you got the part that drove me nuts is the whole Koba at the end, you know, how he started talking about how he was becoming like Koba. I didn't like it. I didn't like seeing that. And then his very, very end, I felt was a little overdramatic and weird.
See, I like the Koba aspect of it because that was my favorite part of the storytelling in the second movie, was how Koba did respect him, but he just kind of went back to his, I don't know, animalistic instincts or whatever, didn't trust the humans and wasn't willing to try to work things out like Caesar was. And there's just that dichotomy of – that was the beginning of the apes turning on their own kind. I mean, think how cool it was that first moment at the beginning of the movie when the humans are trying to take over that base in the woods and you see an ape's hand come on the guy's shoulder and you think that he's there to attack him.
Yeah.
And he just kind of turns his head and talks to him. Mm-hmm. That was like the realization of that is Koba's doing. If Koba didn't exist, none of that would have been taking place right now. So I found that fascinating. Yeah.
I agree with you too. That is very cool and fascinating.
But I enjoyed it as well with where Caesar was having those moments of feeling like he was getting that, because one of the things he said at the end of Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, or maybe at the beginning of this one, I can't remember specifically where it was, that you know he never understood how much he had been affected by the humans because he had been tortured, his face had been mangled and everything, and Caesar is now to that point. He's lost so much. He's had so much happen to him. He's tried his hardest to bring peace, and the humans just won't have it. They just want to attack him to the point of him losing his wife and his son, and he hit his breaking point, and he's now struggling to be the Caesar that he wants to be and to be the Koba that he's tempted to become. I loved it.
That's really astute observation, Scott, honestly. I didn't feel like he actually was Koba, though. I mean, I got what he was saying, but I didn't feel like that. Now, the second movie I love because there is that dichotomy. There's the difference in opinion. You have Caesar, who had a great relationship with humans, so he sees the good in them. And you have Koba, who only had a negative relationship, so he only saw the bad in them. Mm-hmm. And then you have, in this film, you know, apes have gone against apes, so we have apes that are willing to sacrifice their own kind because Caesar killed Koba. You know, not necessarily because of their belief system, but because they felt Caesar did betray his own kind.
He technically did. They had that whole mantra of apes don't kill other apes, and he broke that. I mean, he broke his own rule.
I love that evolution, you know, that it got to that point that we took it to the next step. Like every movie seems to be its own kind of thing, but it's always a natural progression. It isn't forced or ridiculous. I feel like it worked. And you're right. That opening scene was just amazing. Honestly, amazing. I wish the rest of the film would have felt amazing, but I have a problem with the middle act, but I'm talking about Andy Serkis right now. I knew he was going to die in the film. I think you can guess that if you saw any of the original films, yeah, you can totally kind of assume he's going to do that. But when his wife and son are murdered, I did not see that coming at all.
Both of them especially. Maybe one of them.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I thought maybe the son, because they said the king is dead. I'm like, oh, they killed his son thinking it was him. Got it. You know, but my heart was aching for Caesar. And it's amazing to me how he emotes. I mean, when you're watching this movie, and I don't think any other movie has ever come close to motion capture working this well as it does in the last two movies, especially when you're watching him emote, I never feel like I'm watching CGI. I never feel like I'm watching a motion capture. I don't even feel like I'm watching an actor. I feel like I'm watching an ape that's talking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that is magnificent. And I don't think enough people pay attention to that or talk about it. You know, they talk about, well, what great acting and everything else. I'm like, yeah, it's great acting, but it's a great team that put this together. And the fact that I believe a monkey can talk is pretty phenomenal.
Not only that, too, but there are multiple scenes in this movie in particular where there's not a word spoken between multiple characters. There's just looks, and you can just see what they're thinking, and they're telling a tiny little bit of a story just in the way that they're looking at each other or looking at an object. To me, that's fascinating that you can convey that kind of emotion and that kind of plot points just with a look, that when you're not even actually looking at a physical person, you're looking at, you know, motion capture where someone's put art on top of it and you believe it for every second. It's just astounding what they've put together, and it just keeps getting better and better.
And I want to say, I think John said this a couple episodes back, if I remember right, I agree. I don't think Andy Serkis deserves a special award because of the effects or anything. He just deserves an acting nomination. Mm-hmm. I believe that the guy, I don't care about the fact that you have motion capture and everything else. Look at the performance. Yeah, I mean, it's no different than Johnny Depp wearing a hat or anyone else. He's still the one doing the emoting mm-hmm. and getting the performance across and selling us on everything Caesar does. And he's better than most actors I see throughout the year. And he never gets recognized, mm-hmm. ever. That's not right.
It is a crying shame. Just this last week, he was on Stephen Colbert, and like watching him transform into Gollum. He was Gollum. He looked like his face did everything Gollum did, and it's incredible to see that. I mean, sure, he didn't look like a 4 foot tall or 3 foot tall monster, but for all intents and purposes, you're looking at Gollum, and you can't, and there's no escaping that.
And it was cool. He had to hop on a couch and contort his body. Like, he had to get into it to bring up the voice. I mean, that's part of his performance. It's all one thing wrapped up. The one thing I wanted to say before we move on, I really enjoyed seeing how Caesar's vocabulary continues to evolve as the movies evolve.
Yes.
You know, in the first movie, he only says no. In the second movie, he has a very limited vocabulary. In this one, he's a full-on human just about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's having full conversations, and it seems to be going like that for the rest of the monkeys as well.
Yes, I was just going to say that some of the others have been growing as well. Like Maurice, we finally heard Maurice speak in this one. Not much, but you know, and some of the others have grown in their vocabulary, and not just the words that they're saying, but the way that they're saying them. Caesar is his fluency is much more distinct than it was in the last one. I love that they're paying attention to those kind of details from, you know, being a toddler to being an adolescent to an adult and now to a leader and now to a tortured leader. And he just is growing and growing from beginning to end. I love that aspect of this character.
Even the donkey apes, they seem to be growing their vocabulary is much faster because they're surrounded by humans the entire time.
Have you finally come to save your apes?
I came for you.
For me? My God. Look at your eyes. Almost human. How did you know I was here?
I was told you were coming. That more soldiers would be joining you here.
Joining me?
To finish us off. For good.
Who told you that?
Okay, we go from Andy Serkis. We're going to move on to Woody Harrelson. Now, here's where I think we're going to have a little bit of a difference in the acting department, because I don't know if I feel the same way you guys will. He's given his meatiest role in a long time as the Colonel. He's just known as the Colonel. I'd say you could probably call him Colonel Kurtz, but that's just me. So, Scott, what did you think about the Colonel?
I liked him a lot. He's definitely the character that you love to hate in this movie, but he really wasn't in it that much if you think about it. And I know we're supposed to hate him, and all the bad things that are happening to the apes, you know, were orchestrated or commanded by him, but he didn't really do a whole lot of it himself. Everything that was being done to Caesar or being done to the other apes were done by the traitor apes or the humans that were commanded by the Colonel. I feel like the writing gave him a little bit less to do other than command them to do these awful things that were happening. And I got to thinking about it when I was prepping for the show. I think there's a story beat as to why that is. Because if you remember, a lot of times the soldiers would like look up at his little office or where he's staying up there and be like, where is he? What's going on? Why is he always up there? He's afraid of this sickness. That's like his biggest fear is getting this sickness mm-hmm. that makes him mute and makes him unable to be a human at his full potential. So that's why he kind of keeps his distance. So it's one of those where he wants to do all these things to the apes, but he doesn't want to do it himself because he's afraid of getting sick. And because of that story beat, I feel like he wasn't given as much to do as as other villains in movies that you just really hate them because their hands are getting dirty. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So I really liked it. I loved the way that he delivered his lines, but I can't decide if I just full on hated him or actually kind of understood, because what would we do in that situation where, you know, we're fighting for our planet? For he knows that if the humans lose, they're going to be eradicated and gone completely, and these apes are smart enough that they're going to take over, and he's kind of foreseeing what's going to happen with planet with the hundreds of years in the future. So can you blame him? I mean, he didn't have to be as barbaric or as he was, but you know, what would any other human do in that situation?
Well, not being nearly as much of a lunatic, that's one.
Well,
yeah, I would pull away from the lunatic part quite a bit.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, when you're at a point when you realize that the other part of the army that you work for is actually coming after you and not the apes, you got to stop and go, hey, maybe I'm doing something wrong here.
Yeah, he even said himself that the only thing that they're more afraid of than him is the apes. And they're coming after him first.
Right. Yeah. So for him to accept that fact and for him to say that he being okay with that and being ready to fight as opposed to continuing the work with other humans really is counterintuitive to what he's trying to accomplish. So it makes him a lunatic. And not only that, but anyone else get a very strong McConaughey and Reign of Fire out of this?
No, because McConaughey was awesome. Sorry.
All right, fine. I didn't, be that way about it.
I did not. Man, I love Woody Harrelson. I was really excited for this. And by the way, can I just say, there's probably people in the Revolutionary War on America's side that were just as much of a – they seemed like this because they did the same kind of thing. You know, we're going against our own people. Maybe didn't shoot them in the snow, but you know what I'm saying? And I'm just saying, there's precedent, my friend.
Well,
there's precedent.
I get that there's precedent, but this just seems nuttier than you know, monkey shit. So,
well, who's nuttier, the nut or the nuts that are following him? There are hundreds of guys that are just doing whatever he says. At what point does do you not worry about rank and just realize the guy's crazy?
That's an absolutely great point, because that's what happens when you're managed by fear, and his platoon was managed by fear. They're all afraid of the virus. Now, I'm not saying that it's not a valid fear. Obviously, it was. I mean, look, it only took a dowel for him to catch it. But it's still being managed by fear, where it seems like the other group was managed by good and decency and, you know, trying to do the right thing, which both things ultimately got them all killed still. My thing with his performance was I felt he was too one note. I mean, stoically looking in the camera a lot, gritting his cheeks a lot, you know, wearing sunglasses. I wear my sunglasses in the cage. I didn't get a whole lot of acting so much as let me just look tough for the camera. And that didn't do anything. And I'm a big Woody fan. I love Woody Harrelson. This probably came out wrong. This is the opposite of movies. Normally what the problem is it's not written very well and the actor's trying to make it come alive. I think the role was written very well. I just don't think Woody was the right guy for it, personally.
Who would you have ever had in there?
I loved his ending, though. I do want to say I loved his ending. How he, you know, what he was most afraid of is what took him out. It wasn't the revenge. It was just that. What'd you ask, Scott? I'm sorry.
I'd say, who would you like to have seen in there besides Woody Harrelson?
Matthew McConaughey? No.
I was waiting for it.
Honestly, I don't know who the right fit would be for me. That kind of role, I would have liked. Man, if Gary Oldman wasn't in the last movie, he would have been perfect for that. Honestly,
Harvey Keitel.
I'm not a huge Harvey Keitel fan. I don't know who the right guy is. I just know I was skeptical of Woody, and for the reasons that came to fruition, I think, I guess, to a degree, because I just felt like he didn't have the gravitas for that. And I think it's because Natural Born Killers, I felt the same way in that movie. He's trying to be so badass and lethal in that movie, and it just never worked. And I think it felt very similar here. I didn't dislike him. I don't want to say I disliked him. I just never felt like he was, other than the one scene where he's ravaged in makeup and he kills mom and son, no other time did I really feel like he was this Billy Badass.
Even when he shaved his head with his own knife?
That was more because he's grittiness. He's grimacing during that, too. I'm looking stoically. Look at them all lined up while I'm shaving my head up here like I'm Hitler.
I mean, Vin Diesel can do that.
Ooh, you know what? People are going to hate me. I think he might have been really good in this role.
You know what? He might have been.
It would have been kind of cool.
He doesn't have to talk that much. And he's, you know, nearly mute as it is.
Go watch Saving Private Ryan. He can act. He can't articulate. Yeah. He just chooses not to most of the time.
Hey, John, how do you say boat motor in Spanish?
You know, you have to actually say motor de barco. You can't just say barco.
I'm sure they said something wrong here. There's a lot of sign language. I don't think it all works off.
It's all monkey language, man. Monkey sign language.
It is, yeah, sure. But the girl seems to pick it up pretty quick. She's pretty astute.
Well, she's smart.
Like four signs.
What did you think of let's talk about the themes here. We have a lot of themes at play. We have revenge. We have racism. We have mankind's cruelty. We have how war changes people or monkeys, as the case may be. What stood out to you? Why did it stand out to you?
The thing that stood out to me the most was the fact that monkeys were being used against monkeys. And it really broke my heart to see that. You know why they're there. You know why, what's going on. And you know that their life isn't really exactly easier for working with humans because the humans are just monstrous. They weren't even fun to be around you didn't see them party. You didn't see them have a good time. They were just jerks the whole time. So, yeah, I mean, it was really weird seeing that. And I really kind of just got lost in that whole idea.
Well, can I just say lost in a good way or a bad way?
You know what? Lost in a good way. I wanted to see more of that happen.
More of good humans?
No. I wanted to see more good humans, period. But I wanted to see more of like what the monkeys working with humans were going through because they kind of hinted at it, but they didn't really show a lot of it.
Just to be clear, because I think we're going to have people writing in and let us know, we do know that they're not monkeys. They are actually apes, and there is a difference, so don't write us letters. So if we say monkeys, we actually mean apes.
Oh, boy, I don't – you know what? I mean chimps. That's what I mean.
But I'm with John. That whole aspect – they've got the word donkey spray painted on their backs, and they're just basically these mules that are carrying their munitions, and they just treat them so poorly. And Caesar even has that conversation with the big one, and I can't remember if they even gave him a name in this one. He's like, you know, they call you donkey. You are an ape. What is wrong with you? What is so bad about this that you are willing to just give up who you are? That aspect of it was just so powerful to me, and it did wind up getting through to that because that was one of my favorite scenes, which we'll get to later on, but that and the aspect that I already talked about Caesar's concern that he was turning into Koba was like my favorite theme, but we already talked about that plenty. So,
man, I get so much from these movies, and this one was really prominent. I mean, there's a lot of nods to films that touched on racism. You know, you have the flogging scene, which is very reminiscent of Kunta Kinte and Roots. There's a lot of variances in those topics, and the thing I love about these movies and the first one too is that. You know, racism is always like a really touchy subject, obviously, because there's a lot of personal feelings on all sides. But what the Apes movies, I think, do better than most is they kind of broach that topic without ever making it personal, without making it feel like it's coming out of the screen and into our cinema. Does that make sense? Like, it's any group, I think, can relate to Caesar and his gang in some way. You know, black, Muslim, Mexican, even white, working class versus, you know, upper class. There's a lot of variances that people can relate to. So it's not just one dynamic or one group. It's something that relates to a lot of people because we've all felt alienated or treated a little lesser than we thought we were at some point. And these movies kind of address mankind's selfish cruelty, I guess is the best way to say it. And do it in a way that I don't feel is very confrontational. It's more conversational. And I love that about these movies. I always have. I think it's a beautiful way to do it. This one in particular really takes a grand stand at that. you know, with concentration camps. I mean, it's obviously a nod to concentration camps at one point. And I just think they handle it beautifully. And it makes it so you can talk about a topic without even realizing you might be talking about the topic. Does that make sense?
Totally.
Okay. Nobody wants to talk about that topic. All right.
Well, I got one other thing I want to add, too, is just you've got it listed here that revenge is a big theme in here. And I think it's important to note, too, that sometimes seeking that revenge can hurt more than just yourself. It can hurt yourself, obviously. You can put yourself in bad situations. But Caesar leaving his group inevitably put them in a worse place than they would have been if he had stayed, potentially. Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't know what anything could have happened. But because he was so consumed with that revenge and wanting to get back at this colonel for killing his family, it put them in a worse position if he had just kind of, I don't know, took a deep breath, counted to 10, something like that, walked away and just took care of things. None of this would have happened. It would have made for quite as interesting of a movie. But yeah.
Wait. So his son and wife get killed and he just 10.
No, I get that.
So someone's not happy at home tonight.
But I mean, he's making a conscious decision to leave everybody that he knows and loves just to kill one man, which even if he does kill him, it's not going to bring him back. All it's going to do is make him feel good for a while and potentially put his own life in danger and put the rest of his family in danger as well.
So, well, what do you think about the fact that he ended up not pulling the trigger on the colonel? What do you think that is? Do you think that was him deciding that it was a better way to leave him at exactly where he was? Or do you think he felt sympathy and sadness for the colonel at that point?
I think it was him having a realization that because they had had a conversation before about how the colonel had no mercy. And that was his way. He knew that the colonel was going to off himself because he left the gun there for him. That was his way of saying, look at this. You're in bad shape. I can kill you, but I'm showing you mercy like you didn't show it to me. Because they had that, because he even asked him earlier, if the situation were turned around, would you show me mercy? And this was him getting back and saying, yeah, this is turned around and I'm showing you mercy.
I did not see it that way. I did not see it as mercy. I saw it as, this is a nice, cruel way for you to go out, bitch. But I think you can see it all different ways. Like, that's probably because I wanted to see it that way.
Well, the way I saw it is that he couldn't pull the trigger because that he realized that's not who he is, and he couldn't do that himself on another living being is what the way I kind of felt that way. Not especially not again with him rolling around with this idea of being like Koba in his head. At that moment, he realized he was dealing with somebody or something that was suffering worse than he was at that point because of the illness was taking him and he was losing control of himself and all those other reasons. So I think to me, in the end, I saw it as more of a sympathetic ending.
Cool. We all saw like kind of different things. I like that. Mm-hmm. That's a good ending. I really did love his ending because I thought for sure it was going to be the very Hollywood, very summer. He's going to go up there. He's going to find him. They're going to get in this fight. He's going to kill him, but only after the colonel pulls a gun on him. That's the only reason to kill him because he realized he's not going to, instead it went a completely different way. And I thought that was really well done.
And they
really
even had an opportunity for, since the gun was right by the colonel, they had an opportunity for him to quick grab it and point it at him. But no, I was expecting that. I really was. And when he just was able to get his hand around that gun and point it at him, I'm like, oh, this is happening. That was kind of cool.
Hey, let me ask you, because Scott, you just brought up the revenge thing. Mm-hmm. And, how he abandoned them and it put them in a horrible situation. And obviously, he comes in the cage and they're all like, get out of here. You're the reason we're here. Like, it's his fault. They got caught. Come on. You guys should have hid better. Whatever.
Right.
So, I'm just saying.
You
not
can climb
really
trees,
fair.
Guys. Come on.
Yeah, hide a little bit. They can't get you up there. We saw you avoid an avalanche this way, but apparently you can't. So, my question is, because he does that, puts them in a situation according to them. And then later they escape and he does the same thing again. I mean, technically he does the exact same thing twice. He bails on everyone else. Yes, he makes sure they're safe, but he thought they were safe before. Bails on them for revenge. How do you feel about that? Are you surprised by that move.
I was surprised at first because I had the same thought that went through my head. But as I thought about it, he wasn't going after him at that point for the sole purpose of revenge. He was going after him to put an end to it, because he knew that if he didn't end it with him right now, obviously he didn't know the avalanche was coming, but he knew that if he didn't stop this, it was going to be a never-ending battle. Just like how the humans knew that if they took out Caesar, the rest of the apes would follow and they wouldn't be nearly as much a threat. That's how he felt about the colonel now and how the rest of the apes felt about it. So at this point, everybody understood that the colonel needed to go. So it wasn't him abandoning them anymore because, you know, what was his presence going to do in that instance?
I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah.
This whole thing kind of showed me, especially that scene when he goes back after the colonel, just shows me that even apes can be bad dads at that point.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's kind of where I was, because I'm like, okay, the first time you left your kid and you did it for revenge, and there's a good chance you're not coming back. And the second time, you already have witnessed what this man is capable of, and I get wanting to go back and finish it. You've already witnessed how much of a threat this army is. But you leave Cornelius again. I mean, at some point, I find the choice is very selfish. I love Caesar. I think Caesar's a great leader and he's done a lot of great things. And I totally get why he wants to go kill Captain Kurtz. But that's from Apocalypse Now for you kids that don't know who Kurtz is. And I just felt like it was a selfish choice. And the second time kind of irritated me a little bit, because I'm like, why would you do it again? Didn't you learn your lesson from the last time?
Right. Yeah, I'm totally with you. I mean, he could have just looked at it if he was going to try to be at that moment a good parent and a good leader. His thoughts should have been, okay, I got everybody out of here. Time to just go, because these humans are about to duke it off. It would have been cooler to kind of see them running off into the sunset as this war is breaking out behind them of humans fighting each other, because that's just beautiful.
Well, that moment where they're stuck in the middle was intense, because, you know, where do you go? You're stuck in the middle of this one side versus one side, and there's no place that you can go to safety. It was just it was a nutty situation that was kind of fun to watch unfold.
Well, that was what was crazy about that was the fortress is actively being attacked by gunships and by tanks and by soldiers, and the guy on the minigun in front of the place decides, you know what I'm going to shoot at is the monkeys that are trying to get away.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. Let them go, man, at some point.
So, you know, as much as that was a great scene to watch the donkey gorilla sit there and be like, oh, my God, this is kind of bad. And maybe he had the same exact thoughts going, what are you doing, dude? Why are you shooting him? Maybe he had those thoughts, too. And that's why he turned on everybody. But and hey, he decided that's when he wanted to be reasonable. But I don't know, man. I can't imagine being that bad at tactics, decided to completely take a big gun out of the picture, going after something that's not a threat at the moment.
I liked it. I liked it. All right. Well, the special effects and the other ape actors and Nova, those things, does any of those stand out for you or you want to mention real quick?
Well, we kind of already talked about the special effects, and I'm going to echo your sentiment that if it weren't for the apes talking, I would have believed you if you told me that I was watching real animals being used for some of those scenes, because they just looked outstanding. I remember the first time I saw Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, and I could not believe what I was looking at and the level of detail gone in, like every tiny little hair. It's just astounding. And they topped it with this one. I didn't think it was possible, but they did. As far as Nova, I thought she was a nice touch, especially because, you know, you had the apes that were like traitors that were working for the humans. And part of me said, well, if that's happening, well, you know, why can't some of the apes have, you know, a human counterpart? And I think they did it one better by having the presence of this mute girl that, you know, was kind of an innocent stuck in the middle, so to speak. I can't say that I thought her performance was outstanding, because, I mean, she didn't have any dialogue. But some of those interactions with the other apes were just really touching, especially the death of the one who protected Caesar. Was that Luca? Mm-hmm. Was that his name?
Yeah, that was Luca.
And
is he on the second floor?
What?
Sorry.
Oh, my God.
Nobody? Come on. All right, never mind.
Not that the scene with the flower where he had put a flower in her ear. I love that moment to begin with because he came up to her and he looked like he was being all confrontational or aggressive. And no, all he was doing was reaching up to take a flower down for her to put in her hair. And then when he died, she lost it and then took the flower out of her own hair and put it behind his ear. It was just a very touching moment, especially with Caesar in the background just kind of staring on. It was just – and none of them talked. Again, there was no emotion, there was no dialogue whatsoever. It's just so much emotion portrayed just by looks and facial mm-hmm. expressions. I happened so much in this movie and I loved it. And one of my favorites was the scene that involved Nova.
What'd that is some beautiful piece of storytelling, using nothing but, you know, gesturing and emotion and facial emotion. It is a beautiful piece of storytelling, and it's something that we need more of in more movies, I think, because it forces us to engage with our actors a lot more when we're trying to read those situations.
So yeah,
definitely a much, and that's one of the reasons why I love the series so much, is because you do have to really engage with the characters that way, and it puts you on a completely different level. I dig that. The characters I love, Nova was kind of cute and adorable. I wanted more like the donkey version of humans for the apes. I wanted to see, like in the last movie, how there were humans trying to help them. You know, I kind of felt like in the last movie that there, even though there was kind of a rift between the humans and the apes, I thought that there were humans that wanted to work with them and vice versa. And I wanted to see more of that happen. But I don't know why I wanted that, because in my mind, I already knew where this story was going, where there was going to be a segregation between the two races or two species. So,
and what happened to that character from the last movie? Because he didn't get killed. The guy that Caesar was working with?
I don't know. He's probably like sitting in a corner someplace going, ah, ah, ah.
Oh, yeah. Good point.
Well, same thing with James Franco. They kind of give you that little video clip in Dawn, but they never really tell you what happened to him. You just have to
That seemed like pretty much a given that he was wiped out by the plague at that point, because everybody was but a small percentage. So it was just kind of a given that's what happened to him.
I think Franco lived. Thank you.
If anyone was going to live, it was going to be Franco.
That's one of the best performances Franco's ever done. So let's just let him
in a corner somewhere smoking weed with Seth Rogen.
Oh, that would actually be kind of funny. I outlived the plague. Why? Because I'm high.
Weed, man. Nope. It gets you over it all.
I really love the addition of Nova. Bad Ape, you know, Steve Zahn is Bad Ape. That's who it was for that.
Mm-hmm.
That was really, at any moment throughout the movie, it could have tipped over the line. And actually, a couple times I was like, oh, no, he's going to go too far.
Right.
But I really enjoyed that performance quite a bit. The fact that you have somebody just rattled and, you know, living in fear and doesn't want to help, becomes a reluctant hero in many aspects. That was really fun. It was really fun. And it gave a lot of levity to the situation, which you needed.
You mm-hmm. really did, because it was mm-hmm. super dark.
Yeah, super dark. All right, this is great. Let me ask you guys. No, this is – it's great.
Are you sure? Because that didn't sound like it for a second there. It
didn't sound very genuine. This is great. Let's get this TPS report.
I'm going to need you to come in on Saturday.
I got some TPS reports around here somewhere.
Home. Are there more like you? More apes from zoo?
Dead. All dead. Long time.
Human.
Get sick. Ape. Get smart. Then human kill ape. But not me. I run.
You learn to speak.
Listen. Human. Bad ape. Bad ape. No. No touch. That's mine. I'm okay.
Okay, any remaining praise or issues? Either one. Anything missing for you or something you want to mention?
You know what was missing that I really was expecting and I was kind of bummed that they didn't do is that there wasn't that final shot that somehow tied it into the original films. And I'm not talking about...
Good point.
I'm talking about the Charlton Heston one. I mean, I understand. I didn't realize it was hundreds of years into the future, like you said. And I also know that we're in California, which is nowhere near the Statue of Liberty. But even something like just a tiny little, you know, after credit scene of like 100 years later and you just see like a what looks like a meteor or something go across the screen that is like the spaceship, you know, crash. I don't know. Just something like that that would have just tied it all together in a nice little bow with just a tiny little bit. And that wasn't there. I was kind of bummed about that.
But you know what? Now that you mention it, some cute thing where they start showing that lake area that they move into where it starts to build up and have a city kind of grow there.
Yeah. Just like real
something
fast.
Something like that for end credits. Yeah. And it doesn't even have to actually be fast as in like stop motion or anything like that. It can just be like you take all the monkeys out of the scene and in the ending credits, you're just watching that city grow.
Which would have fit with the other movies too, because they always did something like that in the credits. Yeah. You know, where they had the when the pilot in the first movie got onto the plane and they just showed the line of him traveling to Europe or whatever, and then it just spreads and spreads and spreads. They kind of told a little bit of a story through the credits. They could have done that as well in the credits. I feel like it was a missed opportunity.
That's fair. I think that's fair. John, anything from you?
I'm just latching on to Scott's teat on that one.
I've got one other one that kind of bugged me, and this is just a minor gripe, I guess.
Hey, John, it's a good thing he has two teats.
Yeah, right? I might be able to latch onto this one, too.
That's right.
Wow. Okay. I don't know if it's because Caesar is quote-unquote hyper-intelligent and everything, but did you notice that he was able to pick up on some of the sign language that the other apes were giving him even when he wasn't looking at them?
Yep.
Like he would have his back to them or he'd be looking through binoculars and he'd respond to them in audible speech when they're signing behind his back. I'm like, really, dude? You got those sunglasses on that let you see behind you so you can see the sign language or what?
Yep. I saw that a couple, like I think twice at least I counted. Yep. I'm like, the guy's standing behind him. Why is he answering him? I don't understand how this works. Man, he's advanced, all right.
He just needs to like figure out how everybody else is reacting to him. That's how the sentence works.
Well, yeah.
The way I figured it is he waited till Woody Harrelson would be standing on the edge of his
see the
room
reflection
with the mirrored sunglasses and then he'd just be like, that's when he pays attention.
Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. It don't make sense. All right. So I've got a couple, and Scott stole mine. I just would have liked to tie in to that. So where the hell did all these monkeys come from? I mean, there's a lot of monkey humping going on in between these movies because just the ape sanctuary and maybe a couple of zoos. I don't know if we have several hundred apes because of that, right? I mean, they're screwing
years.
A lot.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, at the end of the first movie, there's when the whole battle on the bridge breaks out, there's suddenly a whole bunch of movies, not movies, but monkeys everywhere on that at the end of that movie. Where did they come from? Mm-hmm.
Well, there were two different facilities that they unloaded. One is the facility where he was, where he was born. And then there was a second place that they had unlocked a bunch of them.
I'm just saying it's near gremlin levels, you know, at this point. It's just like, did we get them wet at some point? Is the snow making them multiply? I don't know what's going on. Somebody did. And there's two other ones. This one is funny. Okay. They went from a gorgeous beach to a winter blizzard in hours. Mm-hmm. That was kind of funny. But my favorite was,
well,
okay.
Where's the snow in California, by the way?
Well, you go in the mountains. I mean, you can go in the mountains and find snow.
All right.
But I don't know if you're going to get there in an afternoon.
Yeah.
Whatever. Especially on a horseback. But my favorite one was, so they see all the military is just moving out, right? And they're like, well, we got to follow them and see where they're going. Okay. There is such a thing as a safe following distance.
I was wondering that too. Like, all you got to do is turn around and be like, hey, there's four horsemen right behind us.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I assume they're mostly looking forward, but at some point, someone's going to be, hey, Bob, you got that thing? And he turns around to get that thing, and he sees monkeys behind him. They're really close.
Right.
They were maybe 100 yards away. It was
that Princess Bride moment. Why do you keep asking? Oh, there's no reason. It just happened to look behind us. There's someone who's following us.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're following a band of mercenaries who are moving along the shoreline and there's trees just to your right, I would probably stay in the trees.
Yeah.
As a rule.
If I can move just as fast in trees as I can on a horse.
Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Apes together strong, but not necessarily out in the wide open. That part was a little crazy. All right. Favorite moments as we near the end of our War of the Planet of the Apes discussion. Your favorite moments, John, what were your favorite moments from this movie?
One of my when we first meet Bad Ape and he's telling the story of what happened and you've got Nova sitting there picking up things randomly. The way Bad Ape would stop his story, grab whatever Nova's grabbing at, and then be like, no, stop, and then go back to his story. I loved just that whole interaction and how they played it out. It was cute. It was adorable. It was really heartwarming to see just how he reacted to her. And I don't know why that's my favorite part, but that's my favorite part of the whole movie.
Well, especially how that wrapped up, because at the end when he was like trying to convince them to do whatever, he gave it to her. So here, you can keep it. Yeah. The thing he's been telling her not to touch this whole time. Now you can have it. See, <Yeah. laughs> I told her she could keep it. I love Bad Ape in general. I just thought he was the perfect amount of levity that we needed for this bleak story that was happening. And he felt like an old timer. When he came out in that ski jacket, I about lost it. That was so funny because I was obviously there because they're on a ski resort. But that's what he was using to keep warm. But even when you first met him, when he's riding away from them on the horse, I actually assumed it was going to be a female character. I didn't even for a minute think that it was going to be another ape. And when it's revealed that it's an ape, and his first thought is to give his coat to the little girl, was just a touching moment to me. Like, he's got two guns pointed at him, and all he wants to do is protect this person that he's never met before. It was really cool.
Because she's cold. Yeah, that's so sweet. I had another moment. Oh yeah, the fact that he can't understand the apes when they're sign language.
Oh yeah, that was actually really cool because he wasn't there to learn it.
Yeah, he wasn't there to learn it. He wasn't, you know, he's from a different place entirely, and they'd start doing sign, and he's like, "What are you doing? I don't understand what's going on."
Or the moment with him when they're in the tunnel and the one like bends over to tell him to get on his back and he doesn't understand that he's supposed to be the one to go. And he's like, what are you doing?
What? What do you want? What?
Like, no. I loved it.
What's your plan? No, no, no plan. No, no, no bad plan. Whatever it was.
Yeah.
That was great.
One of my favorite moments was a little bleaker than that, and that was, again, it might have been, I can't remember the name, but one of the donkeys that was manning the gun with the humans when the big battle broke out and actually shot one of the humans with a grenade, the grenade launcher that he was supposed to be getting to the other human.
Yeah.
You knew it was happening, but it was just an awesome moment, especially when the human realizes what's happening and turns around and puts a gun to the donkey's head. He doesn't even look at anybody but Caesar that whole time. There's just that moment of like, okay, he finally gets it. He realizes that these people are insane. They're shooting at the apes, you know, when they should be fighting the other military people. Mm-hmm. This has got to stop, and help Caesar out. And I just love that moment. Again, no words spoken, but so much was told in that one moment.
Can I add to that? That soldier, I love that moment, not just because of that, but that soldier, they kept showing him, and he's the one that Caesar had let go earlier in the movie.
Preacher.
So they kept – what's his name?
His name is Preacher.
Preacher, okay. Well, they kept going back to him. And you know, we've all seen movies like this before. So I think it was building up to be that guy that helps him in the end, and it didn't happen that way. He was actually the guy that was going to take him out. So I loved that it was a little bit of misdirection in that way. It was playing with our expectations. I was surprised that he didn't help Caesar in any way. that he was going to kill him. I thought for sure he was going to let him leave, and it didn't happen that way. Because I felt like they showed a warm nod. They showed a camera close up, and you see the regret in his face or the pain in his face for what's happening to the apes. And ultimately, that didn't change his mind.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I was really annoyed by that whole character himself.
Because I loved it, man.
And I get why you love him, and I understand it, and I'm on board with why you love him. But to me, it was like I just wanted to like shake him. I wanted to grab him by the scruff of his neck and just shake him. Just like, what is the matter with you? Just do what you know is right. I can see that you can see it. Just do it, stupid.
So did Caesar.
Yeah, but that's why I love it, because there are people that they know it's wrong, but they still do the wrong thing because they're afraid to go against it. And that's why I loved it, because it's absolutely what happens in war. He's following orders, even though, because unfortunately in these kind of movies, you see the soldier that knows it's wrong. He ends up doing the right thing. That doesn't always happen in war. A lot of soldiers will just follow orders because that's what they were told. And you're trained in the military. You are trained to do what you are told no matter what. Very, very rarely are you questioning orders. And if you do, there's a good chance you're gonna be in the brig. You're going to get fired. Go look at the 13 hours guys. They went in Benghazi. They went against their orders and they ended up getting fired. You know, and they could have been court-martialed. So, I mean, soldiers a lot of times will just follow orders. And that's why I love that, because it went against movie tropes and actually stuck to what really happens in war.
Very true.
That's all. Here's what else I loved. I loved how the last act, now the middle act really dragged on for me. I just felt like the pacing was off. It didn't know what kind of movie it wanted to be. It was a little bit of a, we're going to go on a road trip. We're going to do a little High Plains Drifter. We're going to do a bunch of different things, and couldn't decide what it wanted to be. But in that final act, I loved the final act. I felt like it was full of misdirection. I was expecting apes on humans. I didn't get that. I got humans killing each other like we always do. I expected Caesar to die in that final battle. He didn't. He did die, but he, you know, of his wounds, but he made it to freedom. The avalanche wiping out the humans I thought was absolutely hilarious. I mean, and also the colonel going out the way he did. I had a bunch of things that I expected to go a different way because of my movie expectations, and it didn't play out that way, and I love that.
Mm-hmm. I love the avalanche. I didn't see that coming at all. Because
all
I was thinking the entire time was, okay, the bad guys are gone. Now how are they going to deal with the second set of bad guys? It was just going to be like the whole thing all over again. And then this Deus Ex Machina comes in and just takes care of it. So thought it was great.
But it made sense.
Yeah. It did.
Well, it made sense. The thing that drove me nuts about that. See, I guess I didn't have as much fun with the movie as you guys. It's starting to sound like.
Is this like Christmas? Is this like your Christmas again, where you know it's really not that bad, but you seem to think it's that bad? Is it one of those things?
No, maybe. Hey, you know what? I like a lot of things. It's not often that I don't like something.
All right. Why didn't you like the avalanche? Hater McHaters.
Well, the avalanche was fine. I get it. I like the avalanche. I like the fact that Caesar is looking at the avalanche going, hey, there's an avalanche coming right at us. And of course, Caesar's the only one who has brains enough to be like, the big loud noises are kind of scary and they bother me. Let me look at where they're coming from. Oh, look, avalanche. Meanwhile, the humans are like partying because, yeah, they just won. But then they're focusing on Caesar, who's looking at something else. I don't know about you guys, but if it were me and something was looking at something else intently and ignoring me, I want to look at where he's looking.
Especially if you got a gun pointed at him.
Exactly.
Okay. Easy killer. I got it. Whew. Boy, John, so negative.
Yeah. I'm not being
this is how I felt watching Spider-Man when they didn't have Uncle Ben. Now you understand.
No, I don't understand.
You should. Where does this one sit with you guys? As in the trilogy, the apes film as a whole, and what's your final score?
With great avalanches come great responsibility.
Oh, Scott gets 5 points someplace. I don't know where we're going to keep those 5 points, but he gets them.
Oh, that's funny.
For me, this is the worst of the three. I wanted to find a better way to say that because I don't think it's a bad movie. I just didn't enjoy this one as much as the first two. That being said, the performances are great. The special effects are amazing. I mean, you really do feel like you're looking at monkeys on the screen doing things. Everything's shot beautifully. It's a very nice immersive world. I've said it before, and I try not to say it too much, but it's kind of predictable, and it really loses me because of that. By the end of the second act, I'm looking at my watch going, how much more of this do I got to go through? And yeah, it does pick up at the end, but for me, it turns... And actually, since we've started talking about it, you guys have sold me on a few things. The movie's a 6 for me.
All right. Scotty?
Well, what's interesting is I feel very much the same that as John in terms of how I rank it with the other movies, but I still am much higher on it than he is. As good as it was, it's my least favorite simply because I don't feel as compelled to rewatch it as I did the first two. I couldn't wait to go back and watch the first two this week in preparation for the third one. But with as bleak as this one is, I just don't see myself just getting as excited to watch it. Because in most stories like that wrap up in a finale, you're excited to see how it ends. But we walked into this knowing how it was going to end. We knew that the apes were going to overcome. We knew that Caesar was going to die. I mean, we didn't know for certain, but it just seemed like that's the only way that was going to work. So I felt a little bit – the part in the middle, like you said, in the second act went on a little bit too long. But still, the whole thing was an incredible experience on the big screen. With remarkable performances, with the motion capture actors and the special effects added to that, it was a little drawn out, but thoroughly enjoyable for a first viewing, and it's a must see for anyone who enjoyed the first two. So, if $10 were the full price of admission, I would pay $8.50.
Man, I'm right in the middle of you guys. I think Dawn is the gold standard. It's still a $9 out of $10 for me.
Oh, same here.
I absolutely love that movie. It's just under the first Planet of the Apes for me. Now, I know the special effects don't compare, but you don't compare to Roddy McDowell either, so I'm just saying. For me, Rise of the Planet of the Apes wasn't as deep, but it was so riveting, never boring, perfectly paced. I really enjoyed that one. So that one was like a $7.50. This is 7. If $10 full price permission, I give it about a 7. And I will tell you, the middle act really kind of hurt the movie a little bit for me. The first act I thought was great, the setup. Then you've got the middle where he's on his, you know, life journey and he can't decide what he wants to do for a little while. That kind of, you know, if it wasn't for Maurice, I probably would have dipped out of that a couple times. And then the except for the where they come across Winter, because that scene was just really, really brutal, mm-hmm. I thought, where they all had to kill Winter. But the last act was phenomenal. I really love the ending. I love the misdirection. I really enjoyed the movie as a whole. It wasn't as powerful. Now, you got to remember, the standard is up. I mean, the bar is set pretty high because of Dawn for me. So I did go into this with some expectations. And when you have war in the title, I think everybody, myself especially, I expected there to be an actual war between the apes and the humans, and there never really was. It was more, you know, it was more a figurative war than it was a literal. It was more of Caesar's internal struggle.
We'll show the other side of war.
That's true. I mean, yeah, it kind of like, here's the war if you really don't have a way to fight it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's a lot of that. So I did like the aspect of it. I thought they took an interesting approach and at the very least went a completely different way. But then you go look at some of their advertising where they've got hordes of apes going up against hordes of humans. And that scene never happens in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I think you can understand why you might have other expectations, but that's why I let it. I sat on it overnight because I wanted to make sure it sat with me for a little bit before I made a verdict. Because I felt like I probably would have rated it a little lower when I first saw it, just because it wasn't exactly what I wanted. But the more I reflected on it, I'm like, you know what? There's a lot of cool things in here. Brilliant acting, brilliant special effects, and some really cool character choices. And I liked where it went. Unfortunately, Woody was a little shaky for me, but I still really enjoyed the movie.
Woody was a little shaky, huh?
we're just gonna go with that, huh? I'll just give you some monkeys
in my boots.
There you go. All right. That's going to do it for this episode, guys. I think we are going to wrap this one up. Thank you for listening to our War for the Planet of the Apes spoiler cast, reactions cast, whatever we called it this time. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Remember, the next time you go to a theater, buy some popcorn. You know what? I should probably say, please share the show on your social media outlets. You can subscribe if you have not already. You can do it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play. We're on everything. Stitcher, everything. You can find us. We also have a website, thehollywoodoutsider.com, where you can find Scott's review of War for the Planet of the Apes. So be sure to check that out as well. And remember, Scott is also, again, a gaming podcast called The Gaming Outsider. And I do a podcast called Remake This Movie Right. And John, he kind of hangs out. So there you go. Well, you know what? He's a designer. He just designed a couple cool t-shirts. So go check those out at thehollywoodoutsider.com. There's a couple cool t-shirts you can check out. So there. Boom.
I love how he plugs you after you did a t-shirt for us. Oh, yeah. I guess we can plug John now.
It's
Shut
all
up.
Right.
Shut up. Scott, you're not helping me. You're not helping me. You understand? Well, I want to say thank you for listening. And remember, apes together strong. All right, you guys ready for the okay. 1/1000.
2/1000.
3 Mippy Pippy.
John, we really got to work on you following directions. Jesus. Even that. Scott, write that down. Even that he seems to have a problem with.
There was no buttons.
Just